You're listening to Stateside. I'm Cynthia Canty.
The United Nations considers a war stopped even more important than a war won.
If our cities go down, in my opinion, our nation will go down.
You have to think about your dream and what you want to do.
All we were trying to do was just get music for all people.
When you hear the words ghost town, you might imagine a dusty, vacant town in the Old West where cowboys once tread. Well, think again, because our own state has its share of ghost towns. It's Wednesday and time to talk Michigan history with our partner at the Michigan History Center, Mark Harvey. Mark, this might sound strange, but we're going to be talking about Singapore, specifically Singapore, Michigan. Where is that?
It is just north of present-day Saugatuck, down in southwest Michigan, just off the shore of Lake Michigan.
So here it is, right along Lake Michigan. So a potential future port city. Is that how it earned the name Singapore?
Yeah, it was an intentional naming. I didn't realize that the Singapore in Asia hadn't, it was just a sleepy fishing community until around 1819. And then it exploded in growth over the next 8 to 10 years. And so this is 1836. It's not that far after that. And they thought, hey, maybe we can catch lightning in a bottle and use a flashy name that's caught a lot of attention and attract people to this prospective important port city in Michigan.
So we're talking about like the early 1800s, very early in Michigan's history then when Singapore, Michigan was established.
Yeah, right around statehood. Statehood's 1837, and O'Shea Wilder and his sons came from New York and bought up some land near the mouth of the Kalamazoo River and envisioned an important port town.
Besides the lakefront view, what else might entice people to come? What kind of jobs were there?
Well, there actually wasn't a great lakefront view. There was a large dune that blocked that view, and that dune's going to come into play in this story in just a little bit. But people came because a couple main reasons. There was a lot of good virgin white pine timber in this area, so it had a ready resource of timber. So sawmills were built, and that drew people for employment, both logging and in the sawmills. And then there was another, this is a important time of speculation in Michigan. And there was something called the Clinton-Kalamazoo Canal. So we're before railroads were a factor in transportation. And there was something called the canal craze. Michigan had it bad. We were trying to look for easy transportation routes across the interior of the state. And they drew up this plan for a canal that went from Macomb, Clinton Township, over Macomb, all the way across the state to the mouth of the Kalamazoo River.
Hmm.
And this was going to make, this set Singapore up to be the port entry for Great Lakes shipping. But.
It never happened. I hear a great big but.
But it didn't get very far.
And we're talking Michigan ghost town. So what brought on the demise of Singapore?
I think a lot of factors. One was that the town really would have been better positioned at the actual mouth of the river, right on the lake, but O'Shea Wilder couldn't, as the story has been recorded, couldn't secure that actual piece of land, so it had to compromise and go a little bit further inland. As is the case with most logging operations, after a certain point, you run out of trees, so that factored into it. They also had some problems with wildcat banking. Listeners might remember a previous story we did on that. So
yeah, remind us again about wildcat banking.
So wildcat banking was this wonderful idea to democratize banking in Michigan, and the general banking law allowed any 50 people to open a bank. Mm-hmm. Anybody could open a bank, you too. So they did, with disastrous results. So that didn't help the community's financial standing either. So between the canal speculation failing and the wildcat banking scandal and eventually running out of timber and the position of the town, those were all things that factored into its demise. It hung on longer than most.
How long? How long did it linger?
Until the 1870s. I think 1875 is one of the dates that is typically listed.
And Mark, 1871 was a rather historic year in terms of fires, wasn't it?
It was. There was fires, the Great Chicago Fire of 1871, and even surrounding communities, there was significant fires in Wisconsin, Holland, Michigan, just north of Singapore. And what that did is really set up an increased demand for lumber. Again, this is 1871. This is right in the heart of the pine era, and Singapore went into overdrive, and that deforestation left a lot of area ripe for erosion, including that dune that was just on the west side of the town.
Strip away the trees, that sand's going to blow.
Yep. That dune became a problem because it was not a stable dune. The sand started shifting, and it started just infilling the buildings in town.
There's a problem.
That's a problem. There was one story, again, ghost town story, so readers beware, but there was one of the last inhabitants was a local fisherman, and he was in a building, and as the sand filled in the first story of his building, he just moved to the second floor. Eventually, the buildings that could be saved were taken downriver to Saugatuck and used there, and people resettled there.
So is there anything, if tourists are in that area around Saugatuck, would they see any trace of Singapore, or is it completely wiped out?
There's a historic marker near Saugatuck talking about the history of Singapore, but it's completely covered by the dune. It's been called Michigan's Pompeii.
That's poetic, very, very poetic. But there are records about the town still that can be found, still in existence.
Yes, and there's still a Singapore Yacht Club. I believe it's mostly private land around where the town site was. But there's lots of records, both in the Saugatuck Douglas Historical Society in Saugatuck and at the Archives of Michigan.
The story of the ghost town of Singapore, Michigan, also known as Michigan's Pompeii. That's the Michigan History Center's Mark Harvey. Mark, thanks so much.
Thank you.